Baby, keep on.
Say what?
Keep on doing it.
Doing what?
Right on. Get down. Baby, keep on.
Keep on what?
Keep on doing it.
Doing what?
Right on. It's time.
Time for what? Oh, time for the Comparison Group podcast. Oh, okay. We're slowing it down a bit. I like that. Come on, get a little closer to your speaker. There you go. Yeah, dance with me. Let's get relaxed. Let's get thirsty for information. Let's get thirsty for differing opinions and viewpoints. Let's get thirsty for discussion and not debate. Let's discuss the results of perception and reasoning and how it applies to a cognitive approach to psychology that emphasizes internal mental processes. That's so hot. I want everyone listening right now to promise me three things. Number one, you'll subscribe for free to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, or Pandora. Number two, you will share the show by copying and pasting the link on your social media. And number three, you will put your clothes back on, because I know you took them off by now. Come on, let's start the show.
I've got to keep you pleasing every way I can. Gonna give you all of me, as much as you can stand. Make love to you right now, that's all I want to do. I know you need it, girl, and you know I need it too. Cause I found what the world is searching for. Here, right here, my dear, I don't have to look no more. In all my days, I hope and I pray.
Why do I insist on being so silly? This is a serious political podcast, for goodness sake. Thank you, at least, for taking it seriously and sending me such intelligent comments. You continue to encourage me that there are, in fact, intelligent, middle-of-the-road, reasonable people left in the country. People that believe, or people that realize, consistency means being consistent in your criticism or praise. Consistency means being critical of either party or person within that party when it's warranted. Being normal and smart means being willing to admit when you're wrong. That's what I'll get to in this episode. I told you last episode I would point out some things I have gotten wrong on this podcast. We're about 60 episodes or so in, depending on which platform you choose to go to listen. For some reason, Apple Podcast has a different number of episodes than Pandora does, but so be it. But I figured if I pat myself on the back for when I got it right, wouldn't it only be fair to admit to some things I got wrong? Wouldn't it be nice if pundits, talking heads, politicians, and journalists did that more often, not just when they were forced to admit when they were wrong? So before I get to that, things I've gotten wrong on this show, a few comments from last episode. Some people agreed with my suggestions to help bring down inflation. Some people felt I was being unrealistic and elitist by just telling people, stop spending. First of all, I didn't say start reusing toilet paper. Wipe your butt with both sides. I didn't suggest washing the top half of your body one day and the bottom half the next day to save on your water bill. I simply suggested, based on available data, it appeared people had not changed their spending habits very much, at least up to the first quarter of this year. And maybe we should start to think proactively, given the way things seem to be trending in the economy. Maybe we should pull back on the spending a bit where you can, just where you can. That's all. That's all I was suggesting. Also, in the last episode, I was pretty hard on consultants and the Politico type and advisors. Really, all of these people, talk show hosts, talking heads, editors, opinion writers. I absolutely have a grudge against them right now, mainly because they don't answer me on Twitter. And I'm man enough to admit it. Part of it is jealousy. I'm jealous that these people are insiders and they have access to information I don't and connections I don't. And they get a level of respect I don't. They get to tweet things like, can you imagine if Barack Obama had done fill in the blank? And they get 50 gazillion likes. I'm a nobody. I accept that. But I can't accept that these people can just be wrong all the time and keep their jobs. You just go back and listen to their past radio shows, past podcasts, read old articles, watch old interviews. And some of these people are constantly wrong, mainly because they have a political bias. And their political bias outweighs common sense. So yes, my bitterness and frustration came out in the last episode, and I apologize if I was being too lectury or too, what's the word I want to use? I hear it a lot sometimes in political podcasts, and it drives me crazy. What's the word? I can't think of the word now. Condescending. That's it. Condescending or smug. I don't like it when I get the feeling that that's how I'm being talked to through the radio, so I certainly don't want to talk to people like that. But here I go. I'm about to do it now. Prepare yourself. Because sometimes you just can't help it. Sometimes to make a point, you just can't help it. I hate being dismissed by people on Twitter when I pose a direct question to them because I'm not an insider or because I don't have enough Twitter followers. They don't know who I am. They don't have to know who I am in order to respond to me. They don't know who any of the people are on Twitter that they respond to because they tweet things that they like. But when I see someone, an economist, a well-paid, high-paid economist, tweet something out like unionize everything, I'm going to respond. And I'm going to respond, okay, unionize everything? Then what? Increase wages, correct? Wages for entry-level people? Surely you realize that we'll have to increase wages for every hourly worker up the chain. Then better working conditions, correct? Will the better working conditions come with a cost? Can you tell me how much? Then I guess benefits for all hourly employees, correct? Will that be benefits just for the individual employee? Or are we including the spouse? Are we including the children? If it's the entire family, that can get costly. Can you tell me how much? Are we adjusting the increased wages for the cost of living in different regions? Because the cost of living is different in Bessemer, Alabama than it is in Staten Island, New York. What if companies start to lobby Congress to create a loophole to allow them to call certain employees subcontractors, thereby avoiding unionization? What happens if my competition doesn't play by the rules? What happens when I go out of business and I have to lay off all my union workers? That's my argument. And it's not even my entire argument. It's a sliver of my argument. And what do I get back in response on Twitter? What's the argument from the other side? Unions are good, period. Period spelled out. Oh, well, you certainly presented an airtight argument to me there. I thought I had you until you spelled out, period. Unions are good, period. Unions are good, period. 900,000 likes and cha-ching, off to the bank. Now that I've got my bitterness out of the way, let me say, some of these people are very important to policymaking. Oh, yeah, no, no, listen, this is the What Did I Get Wrong episode. So I stand by everything I just said, but at the same time, I have to admit, some of these people are very important in policymaking. And you know what? I'm not going to play the clip. I'm going to encourage you, if you want to hear it, go back and listen to the show. Which, let me remind you, if you go looking for past episodes, you may not find them on the website. If you're used to going to the website, www.thecomparisongroup.com, all of the episodes are not up there. I took some down in order to make it easier for people to scroll through on their cell phones. So if you're looking for older episodes, you have to go to Apple, you got to go to Spotify, blah, 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 so on, so on. But I'm not going to play the clip. I'm going to save some time here. I talked about Joe Biden. The episode was my grade on Biden's first year. It was from January of this year, January of 2022, episode entitled My Grade on Biden's First Year. You know what? I got to play the clip. You're not going to know what the heck I'm talking about if I don't play the clip. I'll try and keep it short. Here it is.
Number two, I'm bringing in more and more now that I have time. I mean, literally, like you, it's, I'm not complaining. It's, you know, 12, 14 hours a day. No complaints. I really mean it sincerely. But now that certain of the big chunks have been put in place and we know the direction, I'm also going to be out there seeking the more advice of experts outside, from academia to editorial writers to think tanks, and I'm bringing them in, just like I did early on, bringing in president's historians to get their perspective on what we should be doing, seeking more input, more information, more constructive criticism about what I should and shouldn't be doing.
Do not seek the advice of academics and editorial boards and think tanks. They don't know anything. They have been steering you wrong. Don't look for constructive criticism from editorial boards. Having too many smart consultants around all the time is what costs Democrats elections. You want to know why there's a shortage of truck drivers? Go talk to truck drivers. You want to know why cops feel the Democratic Party doesn't support them? Go talk to cops. You want to know why the voters of Virginia voted for a Republican governor? Go talk to the voters of Virginia, not the editor of Vanity Fair. So I shrank that clip way, way down. I gave you about 10% of what I actually said in the episode, because I was pretty harsh on the consultants, on the think tank people, the editors. And you heard me say, these people don't know anything. I also said they don't really work. Way too harsh, way too broad, way too general. The point I was really trying to make, and I should have stuck with the point instead of saying those things about the advisors, is rather than Joe Biden saying he's going to seek the advice and seek constructive criticism from what I would consider the inside people, he needs to go to the outside people. He needs to go and talk to the people who are just normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill people. I stand by that, but to say that the other people don't have value too is wrong, and I recognize that when I took a look at Biden's executive order on competition. Now, I've also been critical of Biden in talking about competition. That's another thing that I've gotten wrong in another episode on this show, talking about how when Biden cites competition as a main driver of inflation or competition as a way to create more equality in the economy, I say, not really, because companies can have a competition of one. There can only be one company doing it, and they're still going to jack up prices. It's going to be whatever the market will bear. Even if there's one company, if you're willing to pay, they're going to charge it. But at the same time, I have to realize there's a ton of other things that has to do with competition that I know nothing about, that I don't consider because they don't affect me. I'll give you a couple of examples from the executive order. This comes from whitehouse.gov, fact sheet, executive order on promoting competition in the American economy, released on July 9th, 2021, so about a year ago, which means you should avoid the first sentence, the economy is booming under President Biden's leadership. Oh boy. Here are some things from the executive order. Make it easier to change jobs and help raise wages by banning or limiting non-compete agreements and unnecessary cumbersome occupational licensing requirements that impede economic mobility. Lower prescription drug prices by supporting state and tribal programs that will import safe and cheaper drugs from Canada. Save Americans with hearing loss thousands of dollars by allowing hearing aids to be sold over-the-counter at drugstores. Save Americans money on their internet bills by banning excessive early termination fees, requiring clear disclosure of plan costs to facilitate comparison shopping, and ending landlord exclusivity arrangements that stick tenants with only a single internet option. Make it easier for people to get refunds from airlines and to comparison shop for flights by requiring clear upfront disclosure of add-on fees. Make it easier and cheaper to repair items you own by limiting manufacturers from borrowing self-repairs or third-party repairs of their products. Make it easier and cheaper to switch banks by requiring banks to allow customers to take financial transaction data with them to a competitor. And it goes on and on and on and on. It's a ton of stuff, including enforcing antitrust laws, including going back and looking at some bad mergers from the past and challenging those. So I have to admit, I was wrong. Competition isn't just more companies providing the same services, the same products or services. That's not just competition. If you have more people selling it, it'll keep the prices down. It's also a lot of these ideas that do come from the advisors, from the analysts, from the think tank people, and maybe even from the editorial boards. So I stand corrected. Next, there is a lot of talk about getting rid of the filibuster or carve-outs to the filibuster to pass things like voting rights bills or abortion rights protections. Now, I've gone back and forth on this. I've talked about carving out the filibuster for things like banning or reforming lobbying and reforming gerrymandering, the process of drawing unfair voting districts to favor one party. Seemed like a no-brainer to fix those two things. If you fix those two things, you fix a lot. Lobbying and gerrymandering? But I had to remind myself, consistency. Would I be okay if the filibuster was done away with or carved out to pass things I don't agree with? There is no question the filibuster is being abused. No question. And something needs to be done about that. But simply getting rid of it does not guarantee bills passed would withstand a challenge by the courts. So my idea to outlaw gerrymandering, for example, would surely be challenged and probably be overturned on the basis of states' rights to determine voting districts. If voting districts are drawn unfairly, well, it's up to the courts to determine that. That can be challenged at the state level. So my feelings and opinions on the filibuster need some more consideration. On one hand, I say the Democrats are wrong for trying to carve out the filibuster for certain things that they want. On the other hand, I don't want to be totally dismissive on the desire to do something because I recognize the abuse of the filibuster right now. So I was wrong on both counts there. How can I do that? I was wrong on my idea to carve out the filibuster for things that I thought would be good, but also wrong to dismiss the Democrats when they say, we got to do something about this filibuster. Something does need to be done. It's just a matter of what. One more. I got to try and keep this show short. I can't keep doing over 40-minute shows. Now, I know there are other things to talk about. Boris Johnson resigned as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. Was I the only one that thought he wasn't really Prime Minister? It was a prank reality show? Anyway, Shinzo Abe, Prime Minister of Japan, former Prime Minister of Japan, was assassinated. Terrible. We had another shooting on the 4th of July. We had another controversial shooting of a black man in Akron, Ohio. So, I know, there's other things to talk about, but I got to try and stay focused. I probably will talk about those last couple of things in future episodes. But just a thought, a quick thought. Is it time for the media to change the way they report on these mass shootings? In reference to the shooter, I mean, we know these are mentally ill individuals, so even reporting their names, their motives, their planning process, if there was any, I hate to think there's someone out there watching and thinking, hey, that sounds a lot like me, because we see the similarities between all of these mass shooters. So I hate to think that the media reporting in such great detail who the person was, that they left some kind of a statement, they had some sort of a grudge against a particular race or religion or a political party, and then they see someone with those same grudges on TV, and they say, hey, he did it. It's time for me to do it. Look at all the attention, because these things are starting to become too similar. Grocery stores and schools, same weapons. I don't know, just a thought. The media can still give us the information, maybe just not so much detail, and maybe not every hour, on the hour, all day long, for a week straight. That's all I'm saying. Let's get to the final thing I want to talk about that I got wrong. And it's not the only or the last thing I should say I've gotten wrong on the show. I've talked about other things, COVID, positions I've taken on COVID that I've said I've rethought. I would say some of the things I've said about how Biden is handling Ukraine, I would say maybe could stand some correction. But the last thing I'll say, I have been begging, pleading for left-leaning politicians, for Joe Biden to take their message to the people that really need to hear it if you want it to be heard. The people who don't agree with you, the people who don't trust you, the people who are misinformed about you, the people who think you don't respect their beliefs. Since Biden got in office, I have suggested he have a public relations person, not a press secretary. Their job is to push the administration's agenda. No, I mean a public relations person whose job it is to strictly go on all forms and all slants of media and give the honest, good, bad, and ugly on the issues affecting people. Where was I wrong about this? In suggesting it. I should have demanded it. Okay, so I'm cheating a little on this one. This is not I was wrong. This is I wasn't right enough. I can't overstate how important I think it is for this administration to go and talk to the people who don't trust them, who are misinformed about them. You can't do it sometimes. You can't do it kind of. And you can't do it with people from the administration that they don't trust. You need a separate person. It can't be the Secretary of Labor. It can't be the Secretary of Transportation. It can't be the Deputy Press Secretary. It can't be the Press Secretary. It has to be a separate person that does work for the administration, but does not push the administration's agenda. And until people see that person who's not pushing the administration's agenda, see them respecting their beliefs, their views, their opinions, their disagreements, until they see that, you can't get your message through to them. The other side of it is, if you only go to the places that are friendly, you don't know how wrong you might be. Listen to this clip from Stephen Colbert. Listen to the welcome Alexandria Miss Ocasio-Cortez, if you're nasty, Ocasio-Cortez gets on the Stephen Colbert Show.
Representing parts of Bronx and Queens, please welcome back to the Late Show, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
I think that means you should visit more often.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way.
It's been a while since we've had you here.
How could you possibly not think you're doing a fantastic job when you get a welcome like that? I don't think Barack Obama gets a welcome like that on Stephen Colbert. And he was president for 8 years and left with a 60% approval rating. That's like a 90% approval rating in today's political climate. So I hear that and I have to ask, what has Alexandria, I'm almost old enough to be president, Ocasio-Cortez accomplished? Now, before you say, you just don't like her. Not true. I respect her passion. I respect her intelligence. I respect her sincerity. I have no doubt she believes in her positions. But, you know, if I ask the question, sometimes I'll try and answer it. What has Alexandria left-lane, must-turn-left Ocasio-Cortez accomplished? So, from Congress.gov, since 2019, about 3.5 years since she was elected, 24 bills that Alexandria, would I be welcome at the BET Awards Ocasio-Cortez sponsored, have become law. 24. She sponsored or co-sponsored roughly around 900, okay? 24 have become laws. Here are some of them. To designate the facility of the United States Postal Service located at 66 New York as Joseph R. Lentil Post Office. Postal Service Reform Act of 2022. To designate the facility of United States Postal Service located at, that's number three. Number four, to designate the facility of the United States Postal Service located at, that's number five. To designate the facility of the United States Postal Service, number six, Negro Leagues Baseball Centennial Commemorative Coin Act. Number seven, to designate the facility of the United States Postal Service located at blah, 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 blah. Number eight, Greg LeMond Congressional Gold Medal Act. Number nine, Taxpayer First Act. You get the point. That's from Congress.gov. Of the 24 bills that she's been a co-sponsor, over half of them are naming post offices or something. Over half. There are a good many of them. While I'm not saying it's not worthy or justified, it's given out commemorative gold medals. By my count, there were three bills since she's been in office since 2019 that have become laws that would have any meaning in anyone's lives. Three. One a year. I'm not giving her a hard time. I'm saying pizza makers make pizzas. Automakers make autos. Lawmakers are supposed to make laws. So what is she getting that kind of ovation for? That's all I'm questioning. Why is she the face of progressive politics on the left? Why? What has she truly accomplished? And it's early. It's early. She got a long way to go. Young girl. But I'm saying, what's with the reaction? What's with the reaction if you haven't really done anything? Let's be fair. Let's take a look at someone else. Randomly. How about, let's see, Colin Zachary Allred. Hey, another three-name person. CZA. Colin Zachary Allred. Who the heck is that, you asked? He's a representative, a Democrat, from Texas, District 32. Same time frame, 2019, he has sponsored or co-sponsored 31 bills that became law versus 24. Four of those bills were renaming post offices. Not half, four. Some of the 31 bills he sponsored or co-sponsored that became laws: to authorize the National Medal of Honor Museum Foundation to establish a commemorative work in the District of Columbia and its environs for other purposes. That's number one. Remote Act. I don't know what that is. Harlem Health Fighters Congressional Gold Medal Act. Dr. Lorna Breen Healthcare Provider Protection Act. Pause for Veterans Therapy Act. Accelerating Access to Critical Therapies for ALS Act. Strengthening and amplifying vaccination efforts to locally immunize all veterans and every spouse act. It seems like he's doing at least as much, if not more, than Alexandria. I was a bartender, not a bouncer, because I didn't have the temperament to be a bouncer Ocasio-Cortez has. So why doesn't he get invited on Stephen Colbert so he can get a standing, rousing ovation? Because it's not about action. It's about talk. Unfortunately, it's about talk. But even if you talk, shouldn't you go somewhere and talk to people who don't agree with you? People who may question your ideas? Otherwise, how would you ever think your ideas might need questioning? I can't stress it enough. So yeah, I cheated a little bit on this last one because I really wanted to make that point. Because she was just there a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted to make the point. When I heard that welcome she got, it's unfortunately about where you go somewhere safe, and what you say when you get there. Say what people want to hear. It's unfortunate. It's a problem. You know, in contrast, I like Stacey Abrams. I've made that clear on the show. I'm a big fan of Stacey Abrams, candidate for governor of Georgia. If she went on Stephen Colbert, I'll bet you she'd get a huge ovation as well. But she would deserve it. Big Stacey Abrams doesn't just talk. The reason there are two Democratic senators in Georgia right now has a lot to do with Stacey Abrams. She's actually accomplished some things. The reason Georgia went blue in the last election has a lot to do with Stacey Abrams. That's the difference. And in a recent interview, Stacey Abrams said, "You're not going to solve a problem if you don't know you have a problem." An old thought, a common thought, said in a different way, but it couldn't be more true when it comes to politicians only doing friendly interviews and the American people letting them get away with it. It's a problem. How can Democrats not recognize that? I swear, I understand the TV show Westworld on HBO better than I understand the Democratic Party. Oh, I see what we're doing now. We pick it up. Pick it up at the end. Finish strong. I like that. Okay, I can dance. I can dance. This is why you got to support me. This is why you got to share the show. Oh, listen to that. That seems very unnecessary. Drop it low and pick it up. Listen on Apple Podcasts. Listen on Spotify. Listen on Google Podcasts. Listen on Amazon Music. Listen on your Alexa devices. Listen on your TV. Listen in the car. Listen on Pandora. At this point, you could probably put your ear to the ground and hear the show. So why not subscribe and share it? Come on, help me out. Help me get bigger so I can get on YouTube. Don't you want to see me dance? Watch this. Watch this move. Oh, yeah. You've never seen nothing like that. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time.